Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. A couple of people have spoken to me this week about difficulties that they're having in their life, that they're right in the middle of very challenging, unhappy times. And one of them asked me if I would speak tonight about how to bear with a period of acute difficulty when you feel like you're just hanging on, like you're in a boat that's lost in a storm, and all you can do is just hang on to the sides of the boat. You can't stop the storm. You can't make the boat go faster. You just have to bear with. And I thought tonight I would try to give some reflections on this situation and how to approach it and how to use the skills that we've learned through Dharma practice at this time. These sorts of episodes come into all our lives, and it can be for various reasons, various causes. So it can be because someone dear to us has died, and we're through the period of the person having been sick and needing to be looked after and all of those things. Now that's over, and now there's the coming to terms with the loss of that loved one. And coming to terms with the loss of that loved one could mean that one has to construct a new life without that person. And it can mean that maybe some unskillful habit patterns from the past that were in the past a source of security, something that helped us in our life, they start to arise again as we try to fill the void that's been left by the loss of that loved one. And it's not an easy task to try to re-establish one's life when that important person has gone, and at the same time to resist the lure of addictive behaviour or unskillful ways of dealing with challenges that have been helpful in the past, because you're trying to do two very hard tasks at once. And sometimes these episodes come because, not because someone has gone, but because they've come into our life. Someone who's very, very difficult, and particularly if they're close, a close relative, someone in our inner circle who may be going through their own difficulties, and they're putting it out and hurting the people who are close to them. And we're one of those people, and we don't have control over their behaviour. We can't stop them from what they're doing, and we have to work out, if we can't stop them, how much can we take from in dealing with or putting up with their behaviour. And we seem stuck in the middle. We can't go back, we can't go forward. We're really like caught in that boat in the middle of a storm. We can't stop the storm, we can't make the boat go faster. This is the kind of situation that people were describing to me and talking about their desperation, really, just to be able to hang on, just to be able to bear with the situation that they can't change. And of course, in Buddhist practice, one of the approaches or attitudes that we're trying to cultivate is this strength of mind which can accept the things that we can't change and learn to bear with them. And the goal is to become equanimous, to be able to maintain the balance of the mind in the middle of the storm. But these people were saying, we're not equanimous. We're not able to maintain the balance of our mind. We feel like we're about to get thrown out of that rocking boat. What can we do? How can we find some sort of refuge or some sort of calm when we feel it's all getting out of control? Now, we may not be in such an acute, intensive situation, but I'm sure that there are probably aspects of all our lives where we feel, that's like it feels some days, or that's how it is at work sometimes, or that's what it's like when I'm with that person. And so there are things that are applicable for all of us. And the first thing, I guess, is to reflect on the fact that the idea that we're in control is pretty much an illusion. Our lives can be turned upside down in an instant just through being infected with a virus that puts us in a life-threatening situation, being in an accident, the company we work with goes bankrupt, all of those things which are out of our control. So we are actually living on the edge much more than we like to acknowledge. And if we can acknowledge that as a fact of life, then the sort of dichotomy that we make between being in control and things being out of control doesn't loom so large. The idea that life was fine until this event happened, until this person died, or until this person came into my life, doesn't seem such a clear-cut thing of now everything was perfect or all right and now it's not. Of course, we can say, well, it certainly was better before and it was more manageable before and I seem to have more space before to make decisions. But just recognising that the fact that things are out of control now is just an intensification of what the Buddha is trying to get us to see is part of our experience. Being born into this conditioned realm, this realm that is constantly being affected by changing influences, situations, other people, events in the society, events in the world, events in our body. That's why we're trying to start to wake up to that so we can prepare ourselves, strengthen our mind to deal with the uncertainty of life. Now, when we recognize that there's just a change of degree between being in control and things being out of control, the intention isn't to frighten us and make us feel, well, there's no point, it's hopeless, because there's always something we can do, even if we can't stop someone else doing what's harmful to themselves. By changing our attitude to that person, by changing our approach with how we deal with that person, how much we give into that person, how much we associate with that person. All of those things can change the situation. Now, when someone dies, we may feel, well, there's nothing that we can do because they've gone. But we can continue to examine our relationship with that person, what our expectations were in our relationship with that person, if there was any unfinished business with that person. We can appreciate what we had with that person, what we did for that person, what we gave that person, and what we got from that person. Not as a way of trying to distract ourselves from the loss that we feel, but to trying to feed the mind what will be helpful for the mind, helping it to gather the strength necessary to bear with the situation as it changes. And this is the other important support for us as we deal with these situations that we seem to be in the middle of and which we have to bear with. They won't stay as they are permanently. It may seem that they're staying with us longer than we would like. Maybe we feel sometimes longer than we can cope with. But if we can stay with this moment, with the understanding that this moment will change, and not project into the future worries and concerns about things that might happen. Because when we project into the future and we allow our thinking to run riot, if you observe that thinking, particularly when you're in a difficult situation, it usually conjures up even worse possibilities. It always looks at the negatives. It always looks at how things are going to be worse or more difficult, or that they're going to come to the point where I can't cope any longer. Very rarely does the mind think up things will get better. It thinks up positives, think up the thought that that person who's making life difficult will change before I'm worn out. And thinking itself and projecting into the future can become one of the things which weakens us, just simply because we don't have control over the direction of our thoughts. And again, when we reflect on this, we see this delusion of being in control. What a delusion it is, because we don't have control over our thoughts. The mind runs riot, and unless we really can take charge of the direction that our mind is running in, then we need to, as much as possible, stop the thinking. And that means not battling the thinking, but being aware. Thinking is happening, noticing in what direction it's taking us, and cutting it right there and then when it's leading us into worry, more fear, more anxiety, more projection of troubles. Troubles may come, but they'll always be different from what we expect. Obviously, if we've got some history with someone, or we've got some unskillful behaviour from the past which is trying to reassert itself now that we're vulnerable, we have some understanding of the course of events that they may take, but we don't know exactly what's going to happen. So recognising that things will change and not allowing our thinking to run away with us and project the worst things, this is very important when we are caught in a situation that we just have to bear with. Otherwise, we use the energy, we squander the mental energy that we need to deal with what is right in front of us now. So the person who's trying to adjust to the loss of a loved one and not to fall into old patterns of addictive behaviour has to deal with the thought right now of wanting to follow old habit patterns. That's what they have to deal with right now. The thing that's in the mind right now. Not what might happen tomorrow or what will happen next time, but what's happening right now. And the person who's dealing with someone who's abusive has to deal with them right now, not with what's going to happen next week or next time, but what they can do right now. So staying in the present moment and being able to recognize the thoughts that are taking us away from the present moment into thoughts of the future and amplifying everything in the negative, we have to be able to observe that, to notice it and to cut through it. And that's why in the meditation, just like the simple meditation that we did this evening, this is very, very simple, basic meditation. It's so important to cultivate that ability to take up the meditation object. And no matter how many times the mind runs away from the present moment, runs away from the breath, that we recognize that we cut through the thinking and that we come back to the meditation object and develop that strength of mind which can stay with the meditation object moment after moment after moment until the mind wanders again. And when it does wander, as soon as we notice it, we don't indulge it. We drop the thinking and we come back to the meditation object. This very simple practice allows us to build up that skill of noticing where the mind's going, of noticing when thoughts take over and run us around, developing that ability to cut through the thinking, to drop it, and to come back to the meditation object, to put the mind where we want it to be, to take control of the mind. And when we are in the middle of a difficult situation that we're trying to bear with, the ability to cut through thoughts, to stay with what's right in front of us, and to have the strength of mind to do that again and again when we're challenged, this is life-saving. It helps us to develop a clarity in the present moment where we're aware of what's going on inside us, in our own mind, in our own emotions, in our reactions, and it allows us to focus in with much less clutter what's happening with the other person, what's going on with the other person who may be central to the dilemma or the difficulty that we're facing right now. When we've got our own mind in order, when we've got some calm and some clarity, some strength of mind, we can stay balanced, more balanced, and we can in that moment know how to deal with that person who may be quite out of control. Or how to deal with our own mind when it's racing to the edge of being out of control. Recognizing out of controlness without losing control. And this is possible when we develop this strength of mind, this clarity of mind, this ability to watch what's going on in the mind and to maintain that distance of watching, even when it's strong emotion, without getting swept away by it. And in the moment, all of the practice that we've done, all of the practice that we've done in being able to stay in the present moment, to not fight with the mind, not try to push thoughts out, but develop that ability to observe what's going on. To be able to observe without impatience, without hating the mind that it's wandered away or that it's full of distress, but just being able to stay balanced with the fact that the mind is unruly. It sounds incredible, but that's what we can do. Unruly mind. Racing mind. Wanting mind. Fearful mind. Observing that mind without following that mind. And this is what the person was describing when they were talking about hanging on to the sides of the boat and the boat's rocking and you almost feel like you're going to get tossed out, but you hang on moment after moment. All of the practice that we've done in developing kindness, compassion, all the practice that we've done that gives the mind buoyancy as well as clarity, that little bit of shock absorber in the mind that comes from our cultivation of loving kindness practice, cultivation of gratitude, cultivation of appreciation, that softness in the mind that instead of the mind being so brittle, it becomes malleable, plastic, so that it can flow with things, adapt to things without being rigid, so brittle that it cracks under the strain. All of the power of the mind that's been developed through keeping precepts and trying to resist one's self-centered and greedy impulses, one's irritated and hateful impulses in daily life, in small and large ways, again and again, all of that is there in the moment to support the mind to say no to this temptation or this feeling of anger that seems as though it's going to overwhelm the mind. All of the effort that we've put into our practice in every ordinary moment, when it wasn't life-threatening, when it wasn't overwhelming, all of that is there supporting us in the moment when we really feel that we're at breaking point. We can consciously call on the recollection of all those moments. We can tap into the energy and the strength that comes from knowing that we've been making this effort. there is actually an effect on the mind which we don't have to consciously tap into. It is there. This is what the purification of the mind is about. Every time we say no to a greedy impulse, that's a moment of purification. And that purification is strength of mind. But we can also actively tap into it when we bring it up and recollect it. We fill the mind with the memory of it. The Buddha encouraged us to do this, to remember wholesome thought, speech and action, to use it as our money in the bank, if you like, that we can draw on in difficult times. When we think that thought about something in the past, the mind is filled with that emotion, the same as it was when we were doing it. And especially if we become skilled at allowing the mind to recollect goodness as a support for itself. Very often we are skillful at recollecting unhappy events, unskillful things that we've done. We can easily bring them up. We can easily feel ourselves cringe as we think of it. It doesn't take much skill to do that. But it often takes a dedication to developing the skill of bringing up the good things we've done, of deliberately bringing them into the mind and dwelling on them in detail and revisiting the feeling that goes with them, a feeling of sweetness, of appreciation, of respect, of confidence, all of these things that come when we recollect the good that we've done, the restraint that we've used, the way in which we've put others first, done things for others without any expectation that we get something in return. Whatever it is that we've done, to dwell on that and encourage that, to feed the mind what will help the mind when it really needs it badly. So at the time when we are feeling like we just have to bear with, this is a way of giving the mind something that soothes the mind and nourishes the mind, even though we can't change the terrible situation that we're in. One of the images which I bring to mind when I'm in this kind of situation where things are unwanted or unpleasant, when there seems to be no way out of the difficulty that's right in front of me right now, is to bring up an image of a ploughed field that has been prepared. I can see the earth and the furrows of the ploughed field, and I can see that field in cross-section, so I can see below the surface of the field. And I can see, as I look at that field, as I conjure up the image in my mind, all the seeds that are planted under the ground, which are there, but which aren't showing above the surface of the ground at this moment. They haven't germinated yet. They haven't put their head above the surface. But they're there nonetheless. And because I can see it in cross-section, I can see them. And to me, when I'm in a difficult situation that I just have to bear with, when I use all of the reflections about this will change, this isn't permanent, staying with the present moment instead of projecting into the future, I recollect all of those seeds of goodness that I know are just under the surface of the field. They're there just can't see them at the moment, but they're germinating, they're active, they're doing their thing, they're growing, and shortly they're going to germinate and put their roots down and push themselves up above the surface of the field. And this is a way of reminding myself that there are lots of good things that will fruit. Remembering the things that have been put in place through the practice that maybe seem to be absent just in this moment. How come I've been doing all this good work or putting all this effort into my practice and now I've got this terrible situation to face? What happened to all that stuff that I was doing? How come this bad stuff is happening to me when I've tried to clean up my act, when I've really tried to become a better person, when I've really tried to develop the mind in meditation? All of that work hasn't been wasted. All of the effects of that work aren't lost. But sometimes we do encounter this fallow field time when it seems like nothing is coming to fruition. And sometimes it seems like only weeds are growing in the field. So this image of seeing all the good seeds that are planted below the surface and are just about to pop up is a way of just dwelling on the fact that all of these good things are there, and they are in fact not only potentials, they're actively working for us in this situation. So for the people who are in the middle of this situations in their life at the moment, as I've asked them to reflect on how they're dealing with it, what new strategies they've got to deal with these difficulties, as we actively reflect in this way, they can see, I would never have been able to endure these difficulties before if I hadn't done the work that I've done. In fact, the work that I've done is what's keeping me going now, is what's supporting me now. The insights that I've developed, the ability to calm the mind in meditation, the ability to contemplate the Four Noble Truths and the First Noble Truth that life is suffering, it has suffering as an inherent part of it, unsatisfactoriness. That is there as a support even in the midst of these difficulties. This is what is actually helping me to get through. Now, very often we need to be reminded of the fact that we're dealing differently with this situation now because of the practice we've done, because of the wisdom we've developed, because of the strength of mind we've developed. We're dealing with it much better than we would have in the past. Even if it's painful, even if it seems at times overwhelming, even if it seems not fair, we are still dealing with it better than we would have in the past. And we need to remind ourselves of that to encourage ourselves to keep going. And again, this is one of the reasons why at the end of the meditation we need to take time to see what we've gained from the meditation. We may have been agitated when we started, we may have been feeling full of aches and pains, we may have been feeling miserable. And at the end of the meditation, we may not be feeling blissful, but we can notice the calming effect of even half an hour of practice. But if we get up after that half an hour and just start back on our ordinary life without noticing the difference, we don't appreciate the benefit. We take it for granted. We don't recognize this is something that is really good for me and I need to keep doing it. Even if it's not easy, even if it takes effort, this is good for me and I need to keep doing it. And we also, over time, notice the gains that we're making little by little as we continue to practice. And this is very important for setting up in the mind the next time we go to sit, the recollection, the feeling, the vedana, a pleasant feeling, and the perception, the memory, ah, this is a good thing to do. I like meditation. Or I don't like meditation that much, but it certainly helps the mind. It's better to do it than not to do it. The next time we go to sit down to meditate, what we've done will affect our approach to the practice. And so that's why it's very important to recognize consciously the benefit of meditation. And then not only does it help us to go back to meditate again, but it also establishes that ability of the mind to notice those things in our life which are really beneficial for us. We start to notice what things in our ordinary daily life add to our well-being, make us feel good, make us feel relaxed, and what things actually irritate us, use up our energy, make us feel uncomfortable. Someone was telling me recently that they've only realized after 30 years of friendship with a particular person that they don't actually get on with that person, and that person is actually the sort of person that always leaves them feeling terrible. They've been friends for 30 years and they've only just recently recognized that in the relationship, because now they're paying attention to what they feel like after they've spent time with that person. And this is what our life is like. We're very often living in a dream state. We're not awake, we're not aware, we don't even know what's going on in us. And just to reflect on that, that we can be in a dream state, but that we can wake up after 30 years, we can wake up, is a wonderful thing to reflect on. Really, after 30 years, it's still possible to wake up. So as we start to notice at the end of the meditation how the mind has changed, whether it's been beneficial, what worked, what didn't work, what helps us, what supports it, that becomes something that we start to bring into our ordinary life. And the things that we've been doing that we reckoned for so long were the things that made us happy may be the very things that make us miserable, but we never noticed. We may think that indulging ourselves every weekend in doing something that's not strictly according to the precepts, or not really what we should be doing if we're following this path, that might be something we've been doing almost like a little treat that we allow ourselves to get away with or indulge in after we've spent a week, the rest of the week being good. And we might start to notice the effect of whatever it is that we're doing. Does it really lead to our ease and comfort? Or is it something that's an old habit pattern that no longer really works for us? We start to pay attention to that. And things like getting up for meditation, setting time aside for meditation seems such hard work. It seems to interfere with whatever else we're doing, or we can't find time, or we don't feel like it, we're too tired, whatever. And then we start to notice, well, actually, that's the best part of the day. After I've meditated, I'm really set for the rest of the day. Or after I've meditated, I can really relax at night. Sometimes we haven't been really paying attention, but now we start to notice the effect on the mind of the things that we've been doing in the ordinary course of our day. And then when we're in the middle of a crisis, of a difficult situation, a situation we just have to bear with, we know what is good for us, what really helps us. We know what our true friends are. We know the things that aren't going to help us. We can identify those things which take us in the wrong direction before we get lost in them. We're able to say no while it's still possible to say no, because we're familiar with the direction that the mind is going in and we know where it's going to take us. These are all skills which develop over time, obviously, but they are skills which can grow from just doing the very simple kind of meditation practice that we've been doing this evening. And one of the images which is again helpful for us when we're in the middle of a bearing with period is the image of being like a newborn baby on this path. If we think of ourselves as often the idea, I should be further ahead, I should be able to cope with this. This sort of thing shouldn't weigh me down anymore. I've been practicing so long, my meditation should be able to cope with it. Very often we challenge ourselves with those sorts of thoughts. But if we appreciate that if we've just started to practice in this life, we're just like a child who's been born and who's slowly and gradually, little by little, got to grow. And the pace can very often be a pace which we can't speed up. There's just a natural pace of growth. And just like a young child growing, they often have to stand up and fall over many times before they can learn to walk. But each little step is a great step, is a big step, because it's always a growth, a sign of growth. It's always building on what we've done up until that point. But it takes time, it takes patience, and we have to be willing to just continue to put in the effort just to get up and take that next step. Even if we fall over, just get up and take the next step. So if we look on ourselves as like a child learning to walk, growing according to its own pace, not according to our wishes and expectations, then when we encounter these kinds of difficult episodes in our life, we're less likely to give up. We're less likely to be disappointed and blaming ourselves, criticizing ourselves. We're more willing to be able to see this thing that we're faced with right now as just another part of the practice. It's all easier said than done, but for all of us, we all have to do the same things. We're all caught in the same situation of being subject to greed, hatred and delusion, and we all need to work to overcome the delusion and to let go of the greed and hatred. And these kinds of very difficult times are the times that when we look back on them, we say, wow, I've really grown in that, and I can see how much this practice has helped me. When the going is easy, we can take it for granted. We don't realise what we've gained through this practice, and sometimes we can fall back simply because we become complacent. So I encourage all of you, if you whether you're going through a difficult period or not, to take heart, to recognise that this is really what life is all about. It contains the ups as well as the downs, but we can use anything that we encountering as fuel for our practice. So may this teaching be of benefit to all of you, and may the merit of this teaching help us all to attain Nibbana.